Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. One of the key themes in Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet is the dangers of convention, of allowing oneself to live a life, to engage in relations with others and actions and words that are remaining at a conventional level. And this is something that I think is just as relevant today as it was in Rilke's own time, perhaps even more so given the proliferation of the internet and, you know, the ways in which we can reach human beings across the world. We cannot get entirely away from convention. I mean, we're using language to begin with, and we can't do something that's totally original because we wouldn't even be able to recognize it as such. But convention, when it's relied upon as sort of the basis, the criterion for what is valuable, for what is authentic, what is genuine, leads us into some, as Rilke is going to talk about it, some sterile, some lifeless, even though there's life there, some fundamentally hemmed in ways of existing. And the other word that he uses quite a bit, superficial, you know, meaning that we stay at the level of the surface and we don't descend into the depths where he thinks the real action of life is. Not that there isn't action on the surface level as well and what's publicly observable, but we need to have roots, and conventions keep us from having deep roots. They have their own little roots that go into surface deep, but they can't really withstand anything that goes deeper than that. And Rilke talks about conventions in this work in three main areas of life. One is in art. His interlocutor, Mr. Kapus, sends him a poem, which Rilke responds to by saying, "Your poem, I'm sorry, just isn't very good. You don't have a style yet. You are," and he's saying this without saying this in these very words, "you're kind of conventional. You're just at that level. As a matter of fact, avoid any sort of reliance on conventions or tropes or the what you think a poet ought to be doing. Write about this instead." Another that he discusses at considerable length, particularly in letter 7, but in also a few other places, has to do with sexuality, love, relations between men and women. And Rilke says that there's actually no area that's so conventional as this. The area that, think about this, he's writing this, you know, a little bit after the turn of the century, and he's writing as somebody who's part of the European elite, so he's quite a liberated person. He's writing this as somebody who sees all the possibilities ahead and says, yes, many of them are actually just new forms of convention. Don't kid yourself. And then finally, he talks in letter 6, about professions or vocations. Mr. Kapus is a soldier, and Rilke is going to give him some advice about the conventions that are involved in that. As a matter of fact, in his final letter to him, he talks about his interlocutor. He says, "I'm glad you have that firm, sayable existence within you, that title, that uniform, that service, all that tangible and limited world, which in such surroundings, with such an isolated and not a numerous body of men, takes on seriousness and necessity, above and beyond the frivolity and mere time passing of the military profession." So he's saying, you have gone beyond the conventionality that is so dangerous in the profession that you have selected, the convention that so many people within your unit probably have succumbed to. So I have several different points that I thought were really relevant that I want to stress coming from different letters. One is he talks about, and this is a really wonderful turn of phrase. He talks about conventions being established like public shelters on this most dangerous road. And the dangerous road that he's talking about there is love and sexuality. And this points towards something quite central to conventions. Why do we have conventions? If they're holding us back, why don't we just get rid of them? Well, we do need them. As a matter of fact, they allow us to venture forth a little bit, gain a little confidence, and then have something we can go back to. So think about dating, for example, right? Convention that is, you might say, under reconfiguration in the days of online dating apps like Tinder or whatever else you want to bring up, Grindr, Bumble, all these other plethora of things. Or you can, you know, connect with people on Facebook or Instagram or whatever. Those are just rife with conventions. People come in with expectations. That's why you can have shows about dating where somebody can deconstruct a date and say, this went well, this didn't go well. The criteria that they're using are essentially, for the most part, conventions, right? Every once in a while, you'll see an original moment arise where you're like, holy crap, something happened on television that isn't just canned crap. But for the most part, it's conventions. And why do we have these established? Well, somebody put up those shelters and other people take, you know, residence in them and word gets out and pretty soon have something that people know about. And we could say the same thing for conversations. We could say the same thing for politics. We could say the same thing for pretty much anything, even cooking. Oh, the recipe didn't turn out the right way. Well, there's an excuse for that, an excuse that you've heard somebody else make. So we have these conventions and they do serve some sort of purpose, but we don't want to just live in a public shelter, do we? We want to venture out into the wide world and we want to go down, as he says, this dangerous road. He tells us that, again, with sexuality, no area of human experience is so extensively provided with conventions as this one is. And then he talks about it with another metaphor. There are life preservers of the most varied invention, boats and water wings. Society has been able to create refuges of every sort. For since it preferred to take love life as an amusement, it also has to take an easy form, cheap, safe, and sure, as public amusements are. He's writing this over a century ago, but it applies just as well to our own time. And we'll come back to this question of convention and sexuality in just a moment. He also says that every profession or life situation is going to have some sort of convention involved in it, right? So this is in letter six. He tells us that, you know, when you look at adults, you realize that their activities are shabby, that their vocations or professions are petrified and no longer connected with life. He says, why don't you adopt the viewpoint of a child? As if you were looking at something unfamiliar out of the depths of your own world, from the vastness of your own solitude, which is itself work and status and vocation. He's suggesting that, you know, we could have a vocation of solitude or Einsamkeit, another very important Rilkean concept. He goes on and he says, who says that you have to have any attitude towards all these things at all? I know your profession is hard and full of things that contradict you, and I foresaw your lament and knew that it would come, because this is something that happens over and over and over again. He says, now that it has come, all that I can say to reassure you is to suggest that perhaps all professions are like that. Filled with demands, filled with hostility towards the individual, saturated, as it were, with the hatred of those who find themselves mute and sullen in an insipid duty. The situation you must live in now is not more heavily burdened with conventions, prejudices, and false ideas than all the other situations, and if there are some that pretend to offer a greater freedom, there is nevertheless none that is in itself vast and spacious and connected to the important things that the truest life seems to consist of. And I'll mention, as somebody who teaches philosophy and studies philosophy for a living, that he's really correct about this. It's not just that, you know, within the creative world of artists, there turn out to be all these conventions of the art world. It's that way in the world of philosophy as well. You'd be surprised how many of my peers are creatures of pure convention. They seem to be doing something very, you know, original and interesting and creative and open-minded, but they're all open-minded in the same way. And they use the same vocabulary for it. And it changes from place to place, and it changes from decade to decade as the fads proliferate, but it's still the same thing. I mean, you could think about cultural stuff as well. You can make fun of people for being woke, right? But wokeness has turned into its own forms of conventions. And even the people who criticize wokeness do it primarily in a conventional way. Why? So that they can reach a larger audience who can respond to them immediately, and we don't have to do a lot of thinking, a lot of reflection, a lot of dialoguing, a lot of thinking things through and mulling things over and genuinely communicating with one another. This is a problem in every profession. This is a problem in every area of life. Now, coming back to the sexuality part, Rilke talks about young people not having fully developed enough, and he says, when they try with the best of intentions to escape the convention that is approaching them, for example, marriage, they fall into the clutches of some less obvious but just as deadly conventional solution. Why? Because everything around them is convention. Whenever people act out of a prematurely fused, muddy communion, every action is conventional. Why? Because they don't know any better. They haven't developed the capacity to respond in a more creative, authentic way to each other. He says, every relation that such confusion leads to has its own convention. Somebody else has already done that, probably written about it on a website or sang a song about it. You know, think about how people regulate their sex life and their love life according to love songs. Those are primarily conventions. And if you try something different, you switch the channel and get a different song on, well, that's a convention too. You don't want to get married, you just want to have hookups, that's a convention. You want to reject, you know, the hookup culture and say, I need something that's more substantive. There was this very funny movie back in the 1980s called Casual Sex that had, you know, a few stars in it, like Rob Lowe and Demi Moore. And one of the characters actually said, I just want to find somebody that I can have meaningful sex with. And at the time that that was said, people were like, oh, yeah, you know, that seems to be something unconventional. That was already conventional at the time that actress said it. And the audience nodding their heads in there were just acting out of convention as well. It's very difficult to move out of that. Rilke goes on and says, even separating would be a conventional step, an impersonal, accidental decision without strength and without fruit. And he tells us that we're in a special time where the goal is to consider the relation of one individual to a second individual and to live out such relationships without some sort of model in front of us. Now, does that mean that like you have to like be even further beyond convention? No, you would be living within the heart of conventions, but you would live in a very different way without buying into them entirely as other people do. And this is another key point. Rilke thinks that convention stands in the way of developing individuality and what he calls solitude, Einsamkeit, which is a central concept in this entire work. And by doing that, it stands in the way of the possibility not of only being on our own, but of having more genuine relations to other people, to nature, and to what he calls things. So I'm going to give you just a few examples of how this could stand in the way. I mentioned in the passage that I read that he thinks that there are many people who are living lives that are essentially convention, and they're hostile to the individual, in part because they can't be individuals in the full sense, and they want everybody else to have the same sort of restricted world that they do. They may actually get quite angry at somebody who doesn't fit into one form of convention or another. He also talks about irony, and this is in letter two. He says, don't let yourself be controlled by it, especially during uncreative moments. When you're fully creative, try to use it as one more way to take hold of life. Used purely, irony can be pure. But if you feel yourself becoming too familiar with it, if you're afraid of this growing familiarity, then turn to great and serious objects in front of which it becomes small and helpless. Turn towards other things. Why? Because irony has the tendency to lapse into its own sort of conventionality, doesn't it? And we live in an age of irony, so this can actually be a major issue for us. Another thing that he talks about, this is in letter five, he says that one of the things that you want to attain is a wholly individual relation to sex, one that is not influenced by convention and custom. And then you no longer have to be afraid of losing yourself and becoming unworthy of your dearest possession. He talks about bodily delight there, and he says that most people have muddied bodily delight into something else because of conventions. We want to be able to have an individual relation as an individual to the things that matter most in life. And so that would include what our profession or vocation or even job happens to be. It would include sex and love. And it would include not just art, but any sort of creative activity that we are involved in. Convention stands in the way of these if we allow it to. And the last thing that I'll say is one cannot simply reject convention immediately. It requires some growth within the depths on one's own part to be able to go beyond it. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.